this is Patrick Daly, and welcome to Interlinks. Interlinks is a program about connections, international business, supply chains, and globalization, and the effects these have had on our life, our work, and our travel over recent times. In today's program, I'm joined again by my colleagues from the Supply Chain Special Interest Group of the Society for the Advancement of Consulting to discuss the topic of value-added supply chain relationships. So joining me today, we have Lisa Anderson, President of LMA Consulting, joining us from the Los Angeles metro area in the US. Welcome, Lisa.
Hello, good to be here.
And Elizabeth Warren, President of Dialed In Partners, also from the Los Angeles metro area. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks so much for having me today.
You're very welcome. So to kick off, I might just make a few comments here to set the scene, see what we're going to be talking about. So over recent years, I guess, with the COVID pandemic and the war in Ukraine, the geopolitical tensions with China, which has been perceived in the US, and the impact of Brexit, which has been perceived more here in Europe, everybody has kind of become much more conscious and aware of the fact that the way we live and what we consume is heavily dependent on the correct functioning of supply chains. So it's amazing, you know, maybe 5-6 years ago, where people would ask me, what do you do for a living? And I'd say, I work in supply chain, and they'd kind of go, what's that? And now that just doesn't happen, because all of these events have put supply chain in the mouths of politicians and news reporters and the average man and woman in the street. So they're all now very keenly aware of how these supply chains involve multiple independent partners, producers, manufacturers, distributors, freight forwarders, logistics service providers, and so on. And these are all working in concert and collaboration. And more often than not, they're doing that across international borders to keep the show on the road, so to speak. So as a consequence, then, these supply chains and what we've come to expect in terms of service and supply depend on the quality of the relationships between all of those and among all of those independent players. So in effect, businesses are competing on the basis of the quality of their supply chain relationships, and therefore how they establish them, how they manage them, how they nurture them is of paramount importance to how they actually sustain the competitiveness of their businesses into the future. But the thing is, these relationships, they'll only perdure if they add value for the customer at the end of the chain. And it's to the nature and the type and the quality of these relationships that we're going to turn our attention in this conversation today. So maybe I'll start with you, Lisa. So in your business, and I guess especially with your clients, what kind of supply chain relationships do you commonly see that they have and that they depend on to compete?
That they can depend on to compete. Well, there are many supply chain relationships, because they're dependent on critical materials and components from suppliers. They're also dependent upon transportation providers, truckers, etc., to ship to customers. They are dependent upon offload suppliers. So you could call them like outsourced suppliers, but it's really more like they don't have enough capacity to meet the demand, but it's a temporary, I consider an offload more of a temporary or they're not like necessarily offloading it to another country or whatever. They're just trying to fulfill volume. So they're responsible or dependent on some of those folks. And, you know, some folks are dependent on what you would just call a supplier, right? For product that might be coming from China or wherever. But basically those are some of the ones that pop to, they're also dependent on, IT supply chain technologies, ERP type providers.
Yeah, so this is where, like in the old days, I guess the ultimate expression of this maybe might have been the Ford Motor Company back in the 20s and 30s of the last century, where they owned the rubber plantations and the iron ore mines, and they did all the metal manufacture and the assembly and the retail, and they owned everything, and the cleaning lady, and everything was in house. Whereas today, businesses are disintegrated in that manner, so they've outsourced lots of non-essential. So you've described a few interesting ones there, which is relationship that you would have with, say, a supplier of components, IT providers who support your business, logistics service providers who move your raw materials coming in, and maybe your finished goods going out, and manage your distribution for you as well. So there's all sorts of relationships there. I mean, might just
You're right. 3PLs, they could easily have a 3PL or something like that. Also, you brought up a really important one, and that's your suppliers, and maybe your supplier, supplier, because that's come up a lot recently. Because you may be dependent on, let's say you think you've diversified away from China, let's say, but you haven't, because if you're dependent on a critical material that's mined in China, you're still in trouble.
Yeah. So that's a big issue, both from a business continuity point of view and risk, and also from governance and social responsibility and protecting your reputation, because you may be happy that your immediate supplier is compliant, but you don't necessarily know where they're being supplied from or from whom they're being supplied. So that's a kind of aspect, I think, of supply chain that a lot of companies are digging into more, because they're reporting on their emissions or their ESG compliance, or they're just concerned about business continuity. So that's a really good point. We might come back and delve into the nature of some of those relationships that you highlighted there, and see what kind of attributes they have and how they are differentiated from each other, and how companies might go about managing them on those basis. Elizabeth, maybe the same question for you. With your clients, what kind of relationships with partners in the supply chain, thinking of it in the wider sense, are they working with, collaborating with, and dependent on in order to compete effectively?
Well, Patrick, I think that it goes along the same line of what Lisa mentioned, looking at your entire supply chain, whether it's from your providers of raw materials, if you're a manufacturer, or if you're a service provider, you still have services such as IT or design, even a design service that could be outsourced. I was just talking last week with a global manufacturer who has some of their designs outsourced to Asia. So as they are looking at doing some of their electrical designs, those aren't even done in-house. They're looking at having those done, outsourced as well. So when there are issues with another country, whether it's a tariff, whether it's a geopolitical issue, whether it's a vendor or supplier issue, when you are doing outsourcing for even things such as IT or design services, there you could end up with some sort of a legal issue. Looking at trademark issues, looking at whether it's something that might be part of a lawsuit. Mm. And this is what was coming up with my client that I was discussing, is they were in a lawsuit their design ended up being part of a lawsuit with another company, and they did not realize that what they were getting from this vendor was something that was part of a lawsuit with another supplier. So I think that the legal challenges are something that you need to take into consideration as well. Not just the vendor relationships, but also the legalities of where that could run as well. And this is something that I had not thought about until talking with this client last week.
Yeah, it's interesting you draw attention as well to supply chain relationships that are more service oriented, where there's not necessarily anything tangible moving over land and sea, but rather a service which can be digitalized. And it's interesting, I think, when you look at the figures, with all the turmoil that there has been in the world over the last number of years, and trade volumes have kind of stagnated or maybe not grown a lot. On the other side, the exchange of services and digital services, that is still growing quite strongly in a globalized sense. So, we've been talking as well about, I suppose a little facetiously about the end of globalization or life after globalization. It's not really that. It's just a different form of globalization. But that reconfiguration seems to be affecting a lot more the tangible stuff. That moves over land and sea, rather than the digital stuff, which is much more mobile and much more diversified and much more robust in the face of disruptions in the physical world. So I was interested, Lisa, I might just ask you to think of some of those relationships that you see and just maybe characterize them in terms, there's maybe three dimensions we could characterize them on. One is the timing of them. How long do they last? What do they look like over time? The other is maybe the complexity of them, in terms of how many interactions and at what different levels. And then the third dimension might be the power balance in the relationships. So if you picked one of those and maybe just thought about it on those three dimensions, what do you see? What does that tell you?
Well, if we pick like the suppliers as an example, I think it very much depends on which client we're talking about. Because like if you have I have a client who supports Tesla as an example. And so, you know, it depends on where you are in the chain, right? So if Tesla was my client.
These guys supply some part or whatnot to Tesla, is that it?
Yeah, yes, a piece. And so like, or, well, anyway, they supply Tesla. And so, you know, Tesla is the big guy is my point. So like similarly in aerospace, like I've typically worked for the company that supplies Boeing, which is in a better position than the company that supplies the company that I've been working with, because there's a lot of tiers in aerospace as well. So it depends on which tier you're talking about is where your position is very different. But in this case, like the time of the relationship with the suppliers that supply the products or the components and the materials that we need to produce, to supply a whole bunch of people, we've had some long-term relationships. The client has had long-term relationships with many of these suppliers. Because here's the other thing, though, is I think it depends on who your client is and how they do business. But generally speaking, this client has done a good job of getting, you know, being a good supplier, customer to their suppliers. So they've had longer term relationships, although they have been, they recently in the last couple of years did start up a new relationship with a supplier in India. And so, you know, the shorter term relationships, you have less history, so you can't rely upon them as much necessarily, to your point. And then from the complexity.
So see if I understand this correctly. So this client of yours has suppliers, one of which is the Indian one you mentioned. And yep. At the same time, your client is supplying into Tesla.
Is yep. that correct? That's true. They supply a bunch of other people too food business. But basically yes, that's correct.
So the relationship they have with Tesla, they're supplying, say, a part or a component to Tesla. Are they doing that on an ongoing basis, or is it from time?
Well, it's a newer relationship in this case. So basically, they have some repeat orders. So that's a good thing. But my point of bringing up like a Tesla is just that they're like a larger company. So it's similar to my aerospace client that supplies Boeing. Is the larger companies tend to be able to more dictate, if you will, what kind of service they're looking for. And that typically is what happens when you're supplying, or, you know, in the distribution side, if you're supplying a Walmart, you know, Walmart has metrics. They look at metrics and they, you know, they establish how well you're doing. Yeah. So my point is just that if you have customers that are like the larger companies like that, they have, from a balance of power point of view, tends to be that they have less power if you're supplying somebody who's bigger that can afford to say, you know, I'm going to look elsewhere, like a Walmart or a Boeing or a Tesla. So you have your balance of power is not necessarily as good. However, those clients do want high quality service. And what I'm seeing is that since the pandemic, they are more willing, and this is a general statement, it really does not have to do with Tesla, but overall, they're more willing to pay for high quality suppliers that where they can be have more reliable service overall. So that I am seeing happen. However, it doesn't mean that they still don't have more power in general. Now, to your point, yes, this client has in-house manufacturing and they have outsourced some of what they could do in-house to India. So I guess it gives them a little bit of a more powerful position in the sense that they could produce it on their own. However, then they would have to order more materials. It's not so easy. They don't have the people, so it's more complications. Yeah. But that is one of the suppliers that they have.
So I guess then it's easy to see then there are supply chain relationships and there are supply chain relationships. So you may have some that are long term and also constant that you're interacting with your partner all the time.
Right.
So, some of them, then you might be interacting with a partner maybe on an operational level, and then others, say for with a logistics service provider, maybe you have a strategic alliance and you're interacting on frontline level, middle management, and strategic management level. And then others you might have, and they're just kind of ad hoc from
yeah, client. No, it's very true. Like basically, in all of my clients, I mean, they have some key suppliers that they keep track of, they have frequent meetings, not just operationally, but, at a more strategic level, so that they can put together Kanban programs where they supply inventory and they put together, when I used to be a vice president of operations of supply chain, we actually did a lot on this topic. We would work with our suppliers and help them develop new materials that would be a win-win so they could improve their cost structure and we could improve ours. So we had more of a win-win margin, but we also made it a win for the customer in terms of the capabilities. So we did a lot of work in that respect. And actually from that point of view, I'll tell you that we had a supplier, and that also is kind of related to this equation, because from a power position, we had suppliers that were in a weaker power position and some that were in a stronger power position. And it had to do with how big they were. Like, for example, we had a large adhesive supplier. They were in the power position because they were big. Mm-hmm. However, we kept it's all dependent on the relationships, because we kept a strong relationship with this supplier and would, collaborated, were upfront with them, would purchase from them. And so when that material went on allocation, we were still supplied material, even though we were in a weaker position. And it's because of our relationship.
Yeah.
We had that same thing happen with a backup supplier that we used for 20% of our volume, even though they were more expensive, because we worked with them proactively. And, when something happened with the ports, so Elizabeth would come into play there. But when something happened with the ports, our backup supplier was able to supply us, even though they had a bunch of customers that wanted them to supply them. But it's because we had been buying 20% from them all along, and because we had been working with them on win-win kind of solution. So I don't know if that helps, Patrick, but that's the ideal position. What I've noticed though is that clients are, well, I guess you could say struggling, but they're struggling to, they just don't have, there's been so much volume and so few resources that they truly are struggling to keep up. So I would say that they aren't doing as much as I'm describing as when I was in that VP of operations position. But a lot of them are really good, so they would do it, but they truly just don't have the resources. So they're actually bringing in extra help to put together some of the analysis to get some of these items done on time. With that said, my client did purchase ahead with the Russia-Ukraine war. When that started happening, they had gotten some I forgot what it was, but a commodity from that region, and they ended up placing a buy, and we were able to provide the forecast and the analysis using a SIOP process, and they were able to buy ahead for a year, and they were able to get better pricing and secure their supply. So they are doing, so don't get me wrong, they are doing smart things. It's just they don't have as much resources to put into it all, because there's just such, I don't know, the pandemic has wiped my clients out in terms of their resources and their volumes.
So Elizabeth, what would be a good example from your world of a of an important supply chain relationship and looking at it from the point of view of the power balance, the duration, and the complexity? What does it look like?
Patrick, that's a great question. And I have a tendency to work more with transportation providers. I do have a few clients that have those long-term complex relationships like Lisa described. But, looking at the long-term relationships with the transportation providers, you certainly want to have an opportunity to discuss what your growth opportunities are going to be and what your expectations are. So you can build that level of trust that your suppliers are going to be able to provide what it is that you're going to need in the future. So I think having communication and having an open discussion and an open level of communication to be able to, be able to express the expectations that you're going to have for growth, and be, for your providers then to be able to meet that growth is going to be very, very important. But to be honest with you, I really don't work on the level that Lisa does with those kind of relationships. Mine are much more transportation related.
Yeah, I encountered a very good example of that in recent years, and a good example because it's not that common, relationship between a manufacturer and a logistics service provider, whereby they were interacting every day on the operational level in terms of, yeah, we're sending a load up to you, will you send this to me, I need this, that, and the other. So they're interacting all the time on that level. But also as well, they interacted on the middle management level in terms of projects that they were working on jointly. And they saw each other on a regular basis. And then they were also putting their heads together at the top level in terms of strategically what's happening in your world and what's happening in our world and where are the mutual advantages. So there were three levels of contact. The duration was long, and the power balance, it was uneven in favor of the manufacturer, but they brought a kind of enlightened self-interest to the relationship. And that was one that I witnessed, and I've not witnessed many like that, but it was very successful for both parties. Maybe come back to you, Lisa. Given all, so you have these three attributes or variables, so the complexity, the power balance, and the duration, and you mentioned about how people struggle to have the resources to manage the supply chain relationships. So what would be a schema? Because everybody has a full plethora of types. So if you were saying, I have a supply chain team here, and there's say six of us in this department, and we've got to manage all of these supply chain relationships, what kind of way would you structure that given those different parameters that you're looking at there?
Well, I was thinking about it as I was answering. I was thinking about that client I was telling you about. Well, we had a, and I always call my clients we, so just so you know. So we had a critical relationship with a with some offload suppliers, mainly because we truly could not support enough of the volume to meet our sales goals. And so we needed to offload volume, but it's not that simple because it was a complex product. You asked about complexity. It's a complex product that required some suppliers that could handle this complexity, and actually had enough room, and there was like a lot of different variables here. But basically, because of the complexity, they were limited in their offload suppliers. And so they have a limited staff, as I mentioned, but they did dedicate someone because this client is progressive. So they dedicated one of their good sourcing, purchasing type folks to this project. And they also dedicated a team to the offload project, if you will. So they took a couple of people out of operations because they have, like I said, engineer to order. So they needed to have enough folks on this team. It was still struggling a bit. And so they ended up like dedicating a one of their really strong leaders to help also move this forward. So that's what was needed to make this happen. So the reason I brought that up is it kind of relates to your question, because they ended up like reallocating people because they weren't able to hire necessarily someone for the position, at least quickly enough. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they're trying to hire someone to replace their key the person who orders. I don't remember his title, but he basically orders from a lot of these key suppliers. And they're trying to find backup support, et cetera, for him. And that's been a challenge because they're located in an area that just doesn't have a lot of this type of talent.
So it sounds like in the practical sense, you've got to kind of look at the full panoply of supply chain relationships you've got and kind of triage them. And
yep, exactly. The shorter way to say that, Patrick. Sorry, yeah. I got carried away with my story.
So these ones here, we're really going to nurture and we're going to look after and we're going to do what it takes. These ones here, we'll just deal with them as kind of transactional. And maybe there's some in the middle that we give a kind of an intermediate attention.
Yeah, exactly. You do a triage and look at where you dedicate your resources. And also, I am seeing clients that are utilizing some outside resources like consultants to help support them. Which we've done. So we've provided them with information that they can use to meet with these suppliers and have participated in getting the offload team organized. So in addition to allocating talent, doing triage to your point, they're also looking at how do they supplement the resources they have in house with consultants with depends. What do you need and what do you have access to?
Yeah. Okay. Believe it or not, the clock is running and we're coming to the end. So maybe Elizabeth, any final parting words of wisdom before we wrap up?
Well, I think that the two of you have come up with some great suggestions, and I just want to add on and wrap up by saying that fostering those relationships with your suppliers and your vendors at every level is really critical, and that's adding on to what you were saying, Patrick. Instead of just having your one level of contact, having a relationship across the board with executive level, the junior C-suite, the C-suite, and then also with your project managers and even across your entire the entire team, really would work toward building your relationship with them, and a long-term relationship with your suppliers for the future.
Excellent. So we'll leave it at that for today. So thanks to Lisa, thanks to Elizabeth, and thanks also to our listeners for tuning in again today. And be aware that if you enjoyed this episode, you can find a full series of probably approaching about 130 episodes of Interlinks at this stage on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, and other major podcast platforms. So until next time, keep well and stay.